This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is iFanboy Special Edition, Batman and Superman, Battle of the Super Sons.
Carry on my wayward son, there'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest, don't you cry no more.
Welcome to my Fanboy Special Edition, Batman and Superman, Battle of the Super Sons. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with the animation brain trust, Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Ryan Haupt.
Hey, everybody.
Let's talk about this movie. There'll be spoilers for this latest of the DC Universe animated original films. Paul, what number?
49.
Whoa. 49-ish.
It depends on how you count them. But it is the first fully CGI animated film from DC Entertainment.
Interesting.
It's not just for cars anymore. It's for people and starfish too.
So this is a standalone film. It's not part of the Tomorrowverse. That's right. That's what it's called, right?
Right.
It's a totally standalone film. And it centers on the Super Sons, Damian Wayne and Jonathan Kent. And let's jump into it. No one who listens to any of our iFanboy shows is surprised to know that this is a movie I was not at all excited for. Not at all looking forward to. I hate Damian Wayne. I am completely ambivalent towards Jonathan Kent. I don't think either one of them serves their parent characters very well. I fucking loved this movie.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I agree. This is really good. This is a lot of fun.
I was looking forward to this because I like these characters. Damian, to a varying degree. It depends on how he's employed, but I like Jonathan Kent. I like the two of them together. I like the sort of odd couple thing they have going on.
Uh-huh. And?
I enjoyed it.
Oh, good. Okay.
I enjoyed it.
I thought you were getting ready to counter me.
I didn't love it, but I thought it was pretty good.
Jeremy Adams was the writer, and he wrote the JSA movie. He wrote another one we really liked. I had it, and I forgot it. But he seems to be pretty solid in these movies, and I thought that his character work here was really terrific. I thought
both
Damian and Jonathan are really well-conceived, well-drawn characters from a writing standpoint. He wrote Soul of the Dragon, which we liked. He wrote World War II, which we liked. He wrote on the Young Justice show. He wrote a bunch of Teen Titans Go. Like he's pretty well into the DC animated world, but he's written, you know, three movies, which we all liked. So he's someone whose name I'll look out for in the future.
Cool.
So interestingly enough, it's called Batman Superman's Battle of Super Sons. It's really a Superman and Superboy movie. Really. I mean, Damian becomes more part of the story, but Batman's barely in it. relatively speaking, to the other characters. It's really sort of a Jonathan Kent story.
Yeah, I was surprised because we start off with the Superman origin story again.
They had to do it because they needed to shoehorn in Jor-El saying something about, like, I hope someday you have a son.
Well, but also Starro and tags a ride.
I actually liked that. I liked that they made Starro a Kryptonian creature. I thought that actually made some sense. That's not in the comics, right? Starro is just a random alien in the comics.
I can't think of an example of, I mean, there must be, but usually it's like Brainiac is part of the final days of Krypton. But yeah, so here it's Starro. And it's interesting that sometimes DC, they'll like pull stuff off the table if it's being used elsewhere. So it's sort of interesting that Starro played a big role in the Suicide Squad and then also here.
You know, we see the ship with Starro tagging along until about halfway through the journey, and then it falls off and it presumably goes off and creates a Starro race. And we go forward in time after a little fun little comic book style montage, and we see Jonathan Kent, who's, I guess, like a young high school student. It's hard to really say the age.
Oh, he seemed younger than that to me.
I thought he was like a 10-year-old, but he's in high school, so who knows?
No, he's in middle school.
Was he in junior high? Maybe he's in junior high school. Maybe he's
12. I think he was in junior high.
I can't tell what all children are, even animated ones.
He's precocious.
He has a good relationship with his parents. They live in Smallville.
He doesn't know his dad is Superman.
They live in the outskirts of Metropolis. I hate Smallville being on the outskirts of Metropolis. I think it's stupid. It takes away this big journey that Clark goes on from Smallville to Metropolis. If it's just a suburb, it's not really.
Yeah, I remember there was an episode of Smallville where like Clark can see Metropolis from the top of the water tower. And I was like, oh, that's dumb.
That's where it first came in. And it's just to me, like, small town kid goes to Metropolis. It's not a big deal if he's just from 30 minutes outside.
If he's from the burbs. Yeah.
Anyway, they live there with Lois and Clark and Jonathan, and his birthday's coming up, and he's looking forward to hanging out with his dad, who keeps getting called away to save the planet. And we reach the point where he's got to tell his son that he is Superman. And I don't know how long it was because my DVD player doesn't tell me how far into things I am when I pause it, but it felt like a half an hour went by before we saw Batman or Robin.
It's close to the halfway point where you get to Damian even coming in.
Starro comes and takes over the Justice League and starts taking over Earth, and that forces Superman to reveal himself to his son and team up with Batman and Robin, and then eventually Superman and Batman are taken over by Starro, and it's up to the sons to save the day. I really liked the characters. I really liked the way it felt like a lived-in DC universe. We saw the Justice League, we saw the Teen Titans, we saw Lex Luthor, we saw all kinds of characters that were not focused but made it feel like we were in the larger DCU in a really organic way. I loved the animation. It's interesting you say it's the CG. I thought it was terrific, and I found myself thinking this should be the Tomorrowverse style.
There were things I liked about it, and there were things that didn't work as well for me.
I liked the design of the characters quite a bit.
I did like the design, too.
The voices I thought were really strong. It was mostly animation veterans. There were no stars in this one.
I wonder if they did that because they were nervous that the CGI style, like, we should bring in some veterans to make sure, just in case the animation doesn't turn out as well, we'll have some good voice talent on board.
Maybe, but my only criticism was I thought that Superman, Batman, and Lex all had a very similar kind of voice. I liked them all individually, but all together they were very deep.
This is a very deep voice Superman. I bumped on it most with Superman. Lex almost had a Clancy Brown. I wondered if it was Clancy for a minute. It's not.
And I had the same thought about Starro. I was like, oh, maybe like he's not playing Lex this time, but they have him for Starro. It's the same guy. It's Darren DePaul is playing both Lex and Starro. So that's why I got a
It was a very big, beefy guys. Superman with a very deep voice, which is interesting considering, you know, like, I tend to like the Supermans that come in a little softer. Like, I still think Tim Daly is probably my favorite voice actor who's done Superman.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I liked it. I liked it personally.
The movie's supposed to be about like fathers and sons. I feel like a softer voice might have been a little less intimidating paternalistically, but I didn't dislike the choice they made or the voice they had. It was just something I noticed.
So the fun thing about the casting is that Travis Willingham, who plays Clark and Superman, is married in real life to Laura Bailey, who plays Lois in this. So,
and I thought Lois was great. I think this is one of the best outings we've had for Lois in a while.
She's great. Yep.
She was fun. She was part of the adventure, even though she probably wouldn't have survived. Batman wouldn't have survived that one part where Starro came out of his mouth and like cracked his skull open to come out. And I was like, isn't he dead now? Like, his jaw has been removed from his face.
I loved her scene in the Oval Office when she was sending the message to John up in the JLA Watchtower.
And blew his secret identity to the whole planet.
She almost big curse word.
Drops an F bomb.
Yeah. Addressing her son directly was kind of like funny.
I actually laughed at that. I thought that was legitimately funny.
Yeah, I like that they didn't soften Lois, even though they're like,
even though she's a mom.
Lois is as a mom. Yeah, usually they would, you know.
So they made her really forgetful and absent-minded in the beginning when she's getting ready to go to work. But almost all the little bits of comedy paid off later, like the hairspray later became a weapon. Like,
yep.
I thought it was very smartly put together.
And like having the baseball scene early on and then tying that to how they defeat Starro. Like there was a lot of, it was very well scripted. I think the thing you were saying, Connor, with the animation, you know, now that they're doing this CGI animation, it's clear that the characters are based off of 3D models instead of 2D models, because the way the camera moves also really leans into this being a 3D environment with 3D characters. So there's a very dynamic camera relative to
some of
the
lot.
Movies.
It moved a lot.
Yeah, the action way more than scenes looked really
cool. I think that's like, because they could. I think it was, something, it was that ability was unlocked by having a fully 3D rendered.
Yeah.
It's not like I didn't watch it with 3D glasses on, but you can tell that these character models are 3D and taking up volume in the space, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And so like, the scene with possessed Starro Lois hitching a ride on the Batwing or whatever we're calling that. And like when she gets knocked out and then like goes flying over top of it.
Yeah.
Into the lake. Really dynamic stuff, like you said, Ryan. And then I really liked the way they depicted Crypto flying.
Yeah, this was good Crypto. It just, I was watching those scenes thinking about my dog, and it's like, there's no world in which a dog should have those powers. That's insane.
Well, he's a bit smarter than your average dog. I just thought he would smell Jonathan and know who he was, but I'm not a dog owner, so I don't know.
Also, he has like an interaction with the Jor-El, like Jor-El's like, you're right, they are statistically like probably screwed over, and was like, oh, Crypto can communicate. So like,
we've gone around the bend on the Jor-El hologram,
yeah,
how much it can do and interact with the world,
right?
I think they needed
it to be like a recording that he could, it was like a recording, and then it was like a recording that was a program to like answer simple questions, and now it's like a fully like autonomous AI that can interact and know it. Like, it's just like, all right, well, let's dial it back a little bit.
And when it points out like, oh, and I only became aware of this like up until my death, and it's like, so like how much can it learn beyond, it gets very technical.
Right. They need to go back to that episode of The Simpsons where Homer eats the chili pepper and goes on the dream quest and says, find your soulmate, Homer. And then he comes back to it. And it's like, find your soulmate, Homer. But how? This is just your memory, Homer. I can't give you any new information.
Right. Right.
You know, Damien, I hate, but you know, he had the perfect douchey hair. He was an asshole.
The Teen Titans literally rejected him for being a selfish jerk.
For being violent.
And he is violent. He's constantly talking about killing people and things.
That was one thing that sort of stood out to me. Just like I think a lot of these animated projects, they walk a weird line between all ages and edgy.
Well, this was PG-13.
And so, some of the, like, it's interesting because the Jonathan and Superman stuff feels a little more all ages. And then you get to Damien, who feels a little, like, if I had any criticism, it's that Damien's characterization is a little bit, like, poochy in this, to go back to The Simpsons. Like, he's a bit, like, too cool for school. And the Damien, I think, works as more stoic and, like, doesn't show much emotion. Because he's basically like more of a weapon than a person.
He also considers himself nobility. Like, he doesn't consider himself a commoner.
Right. But here he's like, he's kind of like, I don't know, he's like Calvin pissing on a logo of something you don't like. He's like, he's a little bit like snarky.
Did either of you read the Super Sons book?
Yes.
I didn't read it. So is this?
It's been a while, but like, I feel like he's a little bit more, I don't know. He's a little more fresh here.
Well, I think the Super Sons book, they were already besties.
Yeah. I just wondered if the characterization was vastly different, because he does come off older, even though he's shorter in some scenes than Jonathan. Not every scene. He just comes off as older. More
the thing I mean is, like, the thing that stood out to me more is, like, they explicitly make the declaration that he has murdered people, which is kind of weird.
It's one of those with like, once you ring that bell, you can't unring it. Like, now he is always someone who has murdered people, and he's supposed to be a little kid.
And they
hero.
Don't like address it in any way. Like, it's not like, because he says it, like, he's like, I have killed people. And it's like, there's one version of it where you could say he's making that up, that he hasn't actually killed people. And there's another version where you kind of have to address that and say, like, but I've gone through trauma.
He says he's killed more people than you've ever met. And I was like, oh, okay.
It was like, wow. So I don't know. It's interesting.
I love that we got Bat-Cow, and I thought it was so clever to have that scene early on where Clark and Jonathan are milking the cow together, and then they see Bat-Cow in the Bat-Cave, and Jonathan's like, oh, your cow needs to be milked, and they have that little, like, squaring off about whose responsibility it is to milk Bat-Cow, and then just, and then when Jonathan Bat-Cow shows up with the bucket and hands it to Batman, he goes, here you go, sir. Just like, that's
right.
So cute.
Right. It's like, what does Bat-Cow that's the thing. As an animal person, I'm like, what does Bat-Cow do all day while
in a cave?
In a cave. It's a very cool Batcave design. It's very, like, it's a lot of infrastructure in there. Sometimes you get more cave to your Batcave. This is much more, like, this is a high-tech facility.
Yeah.
But then also, like, what's Crypto doing all day in the Fortress of Solitude? I hope that Superman visits him regularly.
The Fortress of Solitude at least has an alien menagerie. So there's other animals for him to interact with. Whereas, you know, we didn't see Ace, the Bat Hound. So we don't know what...
Doesn't mean he wasn't there. He could have been with Alfred.
And Ace is not really...
priorities are, so...
Ace is never really drawn as a herding dog. So it's not like that Ace is going to be super interested in hanging out with this cow.
So one thing that was interesting to me is that, you know, in the comics, we see adults beating on Damian or whoever. We've even seen Damian fight his father. Mm-hmm. But I think in an animated sense, because it was motion and there was voices and the sound effects, I was like, oof, when it showed like Batman just pounding on his son. And they showed Superman, you know, clock his son across the room. It seemed to me it had a more of a visceral, uncomfortable reaction to seeing that in motion than you see it on the page.
There's like a heft and a weight to the fighting that you don't get on the comics page, where it like scans that a Jonathan Kent, whose powers have just come online, can't hold his own against a Batman who is one of the best trained fighters in the world and physically still just a lot bigger than him. Right. And I think that like size contrast is also emphasized by the way you can see them moving around each other.
Also, I think they make an interesting distinction when Starro takes over people, that if Starro could actually access your memories or your intelligence in any way, they'd be screwed. Like, I mean, they got John, they got Martian Manhunter. Like, once you take over Martian Manhunter and Batman, you're basically, that's it. That's like, you know, checkmate. But then you see, like, when Batman and Superman, possessed by Starro, are going after the two kids, the two boys, Batman walks a different way. And it's kind of cool. Like, the animation captures it really well, that he becomes essentially like an enemy in a video game. He's just like patrolling. Mm-hmm. And like, he's not moving intelligently. And so that stood out to me is kind of cool, that he's just basically like a zombie.
I do want to point out Matt Peters, the director, I thought did some really nice touches. So we talked a lot about how the camera moved way more in this one. But I remember there was one sequence, and I don't remember which character it was. Someone was on the watchtower and they turned around and John Jones was there with the star on his face. And it was like a whip pan over to John Jones. And then we cut. Yeah. It was very effective in terms of like a jump scare.
A lot of the Starro stuff felt like a horror movie.
Yeah.
Like the way in the dark corridors of the Watchtower, when Green Arrow is first realizing that there's something else on the ship with him and, you know, is kind of trying to figure out what's going on. Like, it had real horror movie vibes, but it didn't feel unearned. It felt like they actually did a nice job with it.
Here's another dumb question that I came up with just naturally watching this is, if Starro is possessing Ollie, does he have worse depth perception? The one eye.
He'd have to.
Yeah.
He's blocking Ollie's eyes, so.
Right.
There were several things where I started to think about it, and I was like, no, I just can't not worry about it, because I was really just enjoying the ride so much. And
that's good.
But, like, you know, I was trying to figure out the world. So if Wally was still Kid Flash, that means Damian seems to have been the only Robin then.
Oh. Do we see costumes in any of the...
No, we didn't. I was looking for that.
Okay.
At one point, he's standing in front of a bunch of...
They're all like tubes. Or
glass
like
tubes,
cases,
and I thought maybe they'd be costumes there, but they looked like they were empty. But Wally's in the Teen Titans, and the Teen Titans was mostly kind of, it was the Young Justice team, wasn't it? Kind of.
It was more like the Geoff Johns era roster of Cassie, Wonder Girl, and Beast Boy.
It had the Aqualad from the cartoon.
Yes. The newer
Aqualad. Calderon.
And then, like I said, you know, Lois probably would have died several times in this cartoon if she was original.
That's classic Superman, is Lois got to get herself into a scrape somehow.
No, I don't know, but I mean, sort of like, you know, she punches through the windshield, the unbreakable windshield of the jet, and she would have mangled her hand, and then she would have died falling off. It's fine. It's cartoon stuff. But there's just little things like that. I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to go with it, because, again, I think the writing was so sharp in this. I really did think that you had a really good sense of Jonathan and Damian as characters and how they were different and how they were similar, and their personalities were really strong.
And they felt authentically childlike.
Yes, yes.
Especially, like, the scene in particular for me was when John finds out that his dad is Superman, and, like, just how excited he is, and that little kid just nothing but enthusiasm way. And when he threw himself off the stairs to see if he had gained his flight abilities yet, I laughed. I thought that was really funny.
I like how it's very clearly like Batman is his favorite superhero. He's like, my dad is the second best superhero.
Yeah. Because kids would like Batman.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I think also you can't have it set up that Superman is his favorite, because it has to be set up that the joke is Clark, that, you know, you listen to like interviews with celebrities and famous people, and if the question ever comes up, do your kids care about what you do? And the answer is always like, no, they couldn't give a shit. So I think, you know, you have to set up that somehow.
Right. I was really happy with the quality of the writing and the character work and how considered it was. And I just thought it was beautiful.
I thought the environments looked a little stale and static. Like, I thought the exterior shots, whenever they're outside of a building, except when they're in space, space looked good. But I thought some of the Smallville stuff didn't look great.
It looks a little, like, clinical.
And I still think the vehicles, I mean, some, you know, they've managed to capture a real dynamism, as we've discussed, you know, throughout this recording. The characters are really dynamic and function really well as cartoons. The vehicles still seem to sort of have the same kind of flat, polygon-esque quality that they can't seem to shake.
I think once you figure out how to make Crypto look right, fly, like, because I feel like that's such a problem. Like, how do you make a dog look right flying? Whatever they did, it worked. Just the way dog limbs move, and like, how do you, you know, show them with momentum? I think you start from there, and then it trickles down from that. Like, you should be able to figure out all the other things and how they move in space. Yeah,
it's like how when they did The Lion King, they brought an actual lion into Disney Animation Studios to let all the artists see a live lion.
I feel like people are of our generation, that behind the scenes footage is like, I don't know if that ran on the Disney Channel or something, but like, that is forever in my mind.
Is that something we just all know? Yeah, I didn't know that was I didn't know that that was completely widespread, but yes, I remember.
I saw it yesterday. Yeah, that's the.
I also remember the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles making of with all the Jim Henson puppetry stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sounds like we were watching the same stuff.
So do we know if this is going to be an ongoing way they animate these movies?
As far as I know, they just said that this was the first time they did it, but not necessarily the last, so I don't know.
Well, I like the way it looked. I like the Tomorrowverse look. I like the heavy lines. It looks kind of like a comic book come to life, but I found myself wishing that more of these movies would look like this. So hopefully this is something they do in more of the standalone films.
And they don't really lose any sense of like expressiveness to it. I think a lot of times if you're doing bare bones CG, it can feel a bit cold, but like you know, all the eye movement and stuff, the characters have personality. Nothing looks like wooden or anything like that, other than like background stuff. But I don't know if this I assume is a faster workflow than
traditional
animation.
Right.
And I would think that Tomorrowverse stuff is somewhere in the middle.
Right.
In terms of workflow. So I could see this becoming a more of a trend.
Well, the results sort of speak for themselves, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just, it was, I thought, really enjoyable to look at it. I thought it was enjoyable to listen to. I thought I was really impressed with the writing. I was really impressed with the characters. I was really impressed with the action. It was good. And I'm glad I didn't look at the back of the box, because they had all the other DC characters on it. I was surprised when they kept showing up. So that was good. I didn't really know Starro was the bad guy either. So I really didn't know anything about it going into it at all.
Starro's having a moment.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting to put them against such a cosmic threat.
I think you have to put them up. You don't have to do this, but I think like they had to figure out a way to get Batman and Superman off the table.
Right.
And so Starro is a good way to do that. There's other ways, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, you can sit in the space, but all kinds of things can happen. But I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. You know, it becomes that sort of horror movie of, as a kid, where all the adults are against you. All the adults that you depend on or trust or look up to are now your enemy, and that can be terrifying.
I do like that, you know, you throw them into their first mission, ends with them almost on like a suicide mission.
There was almost like a Toy Story 3 moment where they're getting ready. They're preparing for the incinerator. The Watchtower is, and I'll just go ahead and say it, because, you know, nobody's talking about it. And we need to talk about the Watchtower's orbit's way too high. Get that thing lower, closer to Earth.
It's huge.
Yeah, this
it's huge, but it's too far away. In the early scene when Superman stops it from entering the atmosphere, like, it's way too far away to already be experiencing atmospheric friction and burning up like that. It's ridiculous. Nobody's talking about
it. It's a giant.
And then
the same
for Starro getting blasted out of the atmosphere. Like, he's already burning up. That wouldn't work, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think if you just surround yourself with enough other matter to burn up, I think you're just trading atoms of atmosphere for atoms of your space station. But it's a very large space station. It's also like a structure like that in space. Superman could not push it from a single point and not have the entire thing just fall apart around him.
Oh, this is, and we don't have to comment on this any further than this. I will just say that, so there is a point in the movie where Lois goes to meet the president of the United States.
Yeah.
And they pause before revealing who the president of the United States is.
Right.
And I will say that I was noticeably relieved to learn it was Lex Luthor.
Who else were you worried it was going to be? I knew exactly who it was going to be.
I mean, I don't know. Just the way they hesitate. I didn't know if they were going to do a real world president thing.
No.
DC never does that.
DC, I know. DC never does. But just the way they framed it, I don't know.
You have PTSD.
I do have PTSD.
I just knew right away. As soon as they went to the White House, I was like,
and that's how they always reveal that it's Lex. There's always like a moment's pause before they're like, ah, and then in this reality, Lex Luthor is the president. And like, I shouldn't be surprised, but.
I thought this was a great little Superman movie that had Batman and Robin guest starring in it, but mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the world of Superman. Even though I don't like dead Ma Pa Kent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like Smallville being a suburb of Metropolis.
Otherwise, how do they live in the farmhouse? Which I guess, like, did they need to be living in the farmhouse?
To be living in the farmhouse. This is sort of like they're taking the Superman Lois TV show. They're taking all these elements and putting them in. It's just like, it's dumb to have two big time reporters for the city paper living outside the city that far. They needs to be in the city.
True. But I think for discovering his powers, a farm is a better environment for that than an urban setting where people are around all the time.
And they get to echo his father's journey. But it doesn't make sense from a practical point of view in terms of, like, again, it's Clark can fly into Metropolis in a moment. But, you know, Lois can't chase breaking news from 50 miles away.
Why is Clark doing a story on bees?
Ants?
On ants.
Or ants. Sorry. Yeah, ants.
Because he's a nerd. I kind of liked that it was like, Jonathan finds the suit, but just assumes his dad's a cosplayer because he's kind of a dork. I thought that was a good characterization of Clark.
I bumped on that too. Paul, listen, ants don't take orders from the queen. That's not how ant colonies work. It's just a pheromone game and chemically driven. And the queen is not a monarch in the human sense. It's literally just the breeding organ for the colony. It's just the thing, the one that lays eggs. But I think they did that to sort of hint at the colonial nature of the Starro organism. Right,
yeah. Yes.
And you wouldn't call, like, one organism the hive mind.
There's a term in biology called superorganism, where, like, a species gets so socially dependent on other members of its species. The term is called eusociality, E-U-sociality.
Okay.
That they functionally can't survive as an individual animal, and so and they offset parts of their own, what would typically be the life cycle of a single organism, they offset to other parts of the group, hence like having a breeding queen. So most ants don't ever have babies of themselves, but everyone in the colony is like their sister or cousin.
Right.
And so they're all still related to each other. So there's still a genetic imperative to keep the hive going. And so you have, instead of having your own reproductive organs, it's like that individual queen over there is our shared reproductive organ. And then that, by that point, we sometimes call them a superorganism because they're functioning collectively.
Well, superorganism sounds better than hive mind. Sound better, but yeah, okay.
So overall, I mean, I was kind of dreading.
You're looking forward to the next.
I was kind of dreading it. I was like, all right, let's do this. But I was about 10 minutes in and I was like, is this really good?
Now, like,
this is really good.
Yeah.
But then again, it was because the first half hour was all Superman.
You think it's because it focused more on the father and son Superman?
Well, I mean, I just think overall it was really well. I had to respect the craft, you know, well, first of all, I go into everything hoping to like it. I'm trying to check my biases at the door.
Sure.
Okay, I may hate Damien, but let's judge this movie on its merits. So that's what I tried to do with everything I did for this one. Yes, he was annoying, but he was written to be annoying. But overall, I couldn't deny the quality of the script. And I couldn't deny how much I liked the animation. And the story was really fun. And I liked the world. It felt like a lived-in DC universe that I recognized and enjoyed.
And this is why the viewers know that they can trust us for unbiased animated brain trusting.
Connor, this is character development.
For me?
Yeah. I'm kidding.
Got a stupid hair.
So just to go over well-trod ground, you dislike Damien conceptually or like because of his character? Like his
I think both.
Both?
I don't like an asshole Robin. It doesn't bring anything to the table. At this point, it's tiresome. No, this Robin that's a jerk to everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know why anybody puts up with him. I think by adding in a biological Robin, biological son, you basically eliminate all the other Robins, essentially, because unfortunately, you know.
Because then the Robins aren't Batman's found family, they're his actual family.
Right.
And yes. He's always going to have a different relationship with a biological son than, you know, than
an adoptive. Becomes a hierarchy, you know, for better or worse, that's just the way it goes. I know plenty of people who are adopted, and that's not a knock on that. It's just that you add in a biological son into a world in which there's a bunch of found children, and the biological son's going to always be the top dog. And, you know, they can't get rid of him. You know, it's like Grant Morrison killed him, and they could have left it at that, but then they didn't kill him. And now how do you get rid of the biological son? You can't.
You can't kill him, because I think it then becomes like Batman's mission is already unrealistic for a lot of reasons. But like his trauma is always his parents' death. And now if he's also the father of a dead child, how can he?
Right.
How can the Crusade still be about his parents when he's lost his own son? Like that to me doesn't scan as a parent with what your motivation
is. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. And so you suddenly lose all this Batman and Robin stuff from 1940 through, you know, 2000 and whenever it was six or whenever Damian first appeared. It's like that whole world and relationship is now no longer possible because you have added this biological asshole to the group and he's always going to be there.
It's like that thing in time travel stories where like it's a fixed point in time. It adds one of these points in the Batman overall story that, yeah, you can't go back from that.
Right. You could have done it. I mean, they had a chance when Grant Morrison killed him off at the end of his run before the New 52 reboot. You could have said that was Morrison's thing. Like he did it.
Right.
He brought him in. He told the definitive stories. We liked him at the time. Then he ended it. And we're starting fresh with this reboot. And Damian doesn't exist in this reboot. And they could have done it there. And for whatever reason, they've gone all in on Damian. And I've talked about this many times on the Pick of the Week show. I'd love to talk to somebody, Warner Brothers or DC, and just tell me why. Why have they gone all in?
There's no answer they could give you that would satisfy you at this point.
No, they could. There could be a business reason. I know lots of business reasons for things they do at DC that are dumb, but I understand the business reason behind them. But I've talked to many writers off the record who've told me they hate writing Damian. But it's obviously a decision that's much higher than the writers are. You know, so it's interesting. That's all. Anyway, I tried to put all that aside, and I did, and I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the dynamic between Jonathan and Damian. I enjoyed the dynamic between the four lead characters. I enjoyed Lois a lot and her dynamic with her son. Mm-hmm. The Teen Titans were fun in their limited bit. John was fun in his limited bit. Green Arrow was fun in his limited bit. It looked great. I thought this was a really enjoyable movie. This is one of the better ones, I think.
How was the baseball?
I feel like they've been good. The last couple have all been good. I don't think we've had a stinker in a little bit.
And Injustice was pretty bad. That was fairly recent. Baseball, you mentioned baseball, Paul. So
how was the baseball?
Good form on the bunt at the end. Mm-hmm. I was impressed by that. I don't think physics-wise what happened with the ball works. It's like even though he's got super strength, just tapping the ball with the bat wouldn't make it do that from a physics point of view.
You can't do a super bunt.
I don't think so. They didn't show him really moving the ball. Well, I mean, maybe.
I dropped AP physics, so and
yeah.
It's my worst course in college. So
also, a really good way to show that you've got superpowers is to bunt a ball to the wall. I mean, even that dumb kid, Melvin, would recognize that.
He's a terrible bully. The kid's name is Jonathan Kent.
Yeah.
And that's the...
Jonathan Kent.
That's the best you can come up with?
Can't stand you.
Middle school bully?
Well, he's a middle school bully. He's a dummy.
All right.
I have no memory of this Injustice movie.
I'm also going to say that right after Injustice was Catwoman Hunted, which we did all not like. Hated. So that was only two movies ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your thesis is incorrect.
That's fine. That's why we do this, is to
that's
learn.
Fine. There's a lot of them. As Paul said, there's 49. So what are your ratings on? Your ratings on Batman and Superman, Battle of the Super Sons.
Seven.
7 out of 5.
Yeah.
Wow. 7 out of 5.
Stand by it.
Sticking with it?
Yep.
I'm going to go 4.25 out of 5.
Yeah, I think I always want to, I think I give it also 4.25 feels right. I was thinking maybe 4.5, but I don't know when it's quite there.
Right.
Hey, are you guys on Letterboxd?
No.
Okay.
Technically, yes.
for listeners out there, since this is a movie show, I'm on Letterboxd if folks want to follow along with what movies I watch.
And what is your username there?
Helped. H-A-U-P-T.
That's good.
I'm going to log this film.
I stand by my 7, grading on a tilt because of crypto. I really...
It was a good crypto.
Good crypto. It gives good crypto.
Not that kind. This one hasn't crashed.
I also had to put aside the idea that crypto was trying to incinerate a couple of children, but... You know, you got to put that aside when you're in a world where super kids are also super. At one point, I was like, he's trying to kill these kids.
They released that clip in advance of the movie.
Uh-huh.
And I felt that way. And then watching the movie, I think I was like, oh, he's probably Starro got him. That's why he's acting like this. And then I don't know.
No, he's just a good boy.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right. So right before we did this show, the benefit to the delay was that we had the official release date and trailer for Legion of Superheroes, the next film that's set in the Tomorrowverse. It comes out February 7th, 2023. It seems to be a full-on Legion movie.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised. That looks cool. I mean, they're adding Supergirl as the hook, but still, it's just like, you know, anytime they deviate from the norm of like Superman, Batman, and Justice League, I'm always surprised. And if they go beyond Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, Flash, or Aquaman, I'm doubly surprised. So Legion of Superheroes, I was like, okay, let's do it.
I'm into it. Whenever they go with the weird characters, they sort of get to have fun.
And looking at the cast list, it looks like a full-on Legion movie.
Get some Mon-El, finally.
Does anyone like Mon-El?
I'm sure.
Yeah. He's allergic to lead. That's why it's insanity.
Aren't we all kind of allergic to lead?
We eat it.
Should we?
Get your pipes replaced.
So I'm looking forward to that. I didn't watch the whole trailer because I didn't want to be totally spoiled, but I watched enough of it to be like, okay, I'm into it, and then I turned it off. But looking forward to that.
Into it.
This is fun. I'm looking forward to that. And then previously we had a Batman, the Doom That Came to Gotham, and Justice League War World announced. They haven't given release dates on those for next year, but presumably those are the three films for next year.
Is War World going to be like the recent Action Comics run that we had?
I don't know. From what I have from this announcement, it's part of the Tomorrowverse, but who knows? We just don't know enough about it yet. The Doom That Came to Gotham is based on a comic. That's a Mike Mignola comic.
Right, yes. I picked that up in a recent Comixology sale and have yet to check it out, but I will.
That's the book that he said that really sort of unlocked his Hellboy style. Interesting to see how they do that one.
I saw a tweet once, Paul, by David Brothers said, comics, unlike heroin, you still buy when you still have unfinished comics. Like heroin, you usually finish the heroin you have first.
Yeah.
It's a strange addiction that you keep stockpiling it, even though you've got plenty you haven't gone through yet.
Well, with comics, I'm always worried about things going out of print.
Or being unavailable, yeah.
And it shouldn't happen with digital comics, but...
You never know.
I have this weird, hoarding mentality with
your lab.
Comics.
We all have our little weirdsies.
Yep.
All right, so we'll be looking forward to Legion of Superheroes in 2 short months. We'll be back with the next Animation Brain Trust show. And until then, happy holidays. My name is Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Ryan. And remember, they're not technically fish. They're not technically stars either, but they're from the stars, so that's good enough. Though my eyes can see, I still was a blind man. Though my mind could think, I still was a madman. I hear the voices when I'm dreaming. I can hear them say, carry on, our wayward son. There'll be peace when you are gone. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.